Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The wheels are not moving because I tell her the worst thing that'll happen is if we dislodge this, the golf cart will go in, you would go in with it, so why don't you stay out? We're going to call up the shop and hopefully they have golf carts where if you put it in neutral, they can use the torque and pull it out. So I'm unstrapping
Tony's clubs.
Your clubs are paramount at this point. That's the only thing that matters.
Does everyone have purses? Does everyone have cell phones? Because you
Carol, stay in the cart and get my damn clubs.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty then. We are live, as it were. You're not hearing this while we're doing it. But we are live at WMAL, which is our new home in Friendship Heights in Washington, D.C. Claude is here because Nigel is working at the U.S. Open. We will get to Nigel later in the show. He has insisted we talk to him.
We're working.
So I said I would actually call him today.
It sounds very smooth. That's the explanation.
Yeah, Gary Braun is here. Chris Liz is here. Michael Kornheiser, father of young Hammer, is here. And the baby boy, Bootsy, who apparently starts school today.
Wow. In true D.C. fashion, it's just a visit day. This is just an info session.
Baby boy, Bootsy, by the way.
He's 2
not
years old.
Not looking like
big
a baby.
Cat.
I think he might be in the 105th percentile.
He's a big
cat. Size.
He's in the 14 category.
Yeah.
He's going to school. He cannot make himself understood by humans other than his parents.
No problem.
To be fair, he's stringing two words together. Baseball.
Still won't say mama, though?
Yeah. He will say mama. And now he, you know what he does now? He looks at me as I've changed his diaper, I've done something to him. He looks at me and goes, mama, and he tries to get me in trouble.
What you couldn't tell from listening is your eyes were sort of like he's manipulating his mother.
And he's going to school. I mean, I don't want to talk about how I grew up in the Abe Lincoln era, but when I was 2 years old and 2 months old, which is Bootsy's age, there was no school for people like me. And by people like me, I mean
everyone in the world.
Yeah. There was no school at that point.
Well, no one had figured out there's a profit opportunity there at that point.
Yeah, I mean, Martin Van Buren decreed from the presidency that
kindergarten was your first opportunity. And two things were true if you went to kindergarten. One, you knew how to use the bathroom. And two, you could communicate.
Right.
These babies now... The baby boy Bootsy can do neither of those things, right?
Well, he did use a toilet for the first time over the weekend, which was a big.
What did he use it for?
He has been flushing the toilet for fun, and there's a Daniel Tiger song that has been teaching him how to use the toilet, how to flush, how to wash up, and be on his way. If you know the song, but no, he is. It's a 2 day a week program. The biggest fear. Liz cuts up all of his food. We have to send him with his own lunch. He doesn't know how to ask for water. She turned to me about a week ago and said, What if he goes thirsty at school?
They just spray him down with a hose.
Isn't that the job of teaching is to make sure that the children eat
are watered.
And drink?
Yes.
Yeah. What do you think? Is it a Cadillac?
You got to water the kid.
My kid's first week of kid. First of all, my kid went at a young age too. And he couldn't use the bathroom in the way that we consider it at that age. But his first week of kindergarten, when he had learned that, well, he kept coming home and saying his stomach hurt. And I was like, what? Why?
That is the most Saliza thing ever.
It's so true. And I, of course, was like,
Daddy, I think I have stomach cancer in children.
It's so true. And we eventually realized that he had gone into the bathroom in the classroom, and there's those lights. It's a motion sensor light, and the light had gone off because he hadn't moved, and so he was petrified of going in the bathroom. So he would go through the entire day without going number one, and his bladder would be ready to explode. So these are the things that you will—
Let me share one more, and I realize this is the first day of Tony Kornheiser Show season, so I don't want to completely get off the rails.
We're here for the rest of the week.
But one other, four more days.
A similar
related story. When Spike and Ike were first born, and came home, and this is when they were very young, but right out of the chute, basically, we, a few days in, realized we're going to need some help, like, overnight. So it gets difficult, because you got two of them, you try to keep them on the same schedule, but you can't necessarily feed them both at the same time, etc. And through someone or another, my wife found some service, and a woman came over. Ultimately, I think spent a couple of months doing this for us a few nights a week. But her name was Haja, and she was from I want to say Sri Lanka, maybe. She was like an immigrant woman who gets pimped out by some agency or something. And she comes over, and we meet her for the first time. And we like pre-interviewed her. She comes over for the first night. Lovely lady. She's going to work like 11 to 4 or something for us, just so we can hopefully get a few hours of sleep. And she comes in. We say hi. We set her up. Here are the kids. They were sort of downstairs, and we go to bed. And we're just laying in bed. And I'm like, Kim, what's Haja's last name? She's like, I don't know. I said, do you have any idea, like, where she lives or anything? Or we just get her through the agency? She's like, no. Now that you mention it, I don't really have any way of getting in touch with her. And we're like, all right. And just went to bed because we were so tired.
Yeah, it's fine.
But it, like, occurred to us, like, we're just leaving. Like, to your point,
children.
It's like this kid who you guys have nurtured and had for these first 26 months. It's now it's like you send him off and it's not like you're sending him to Tony's house where you know he'll get some level of care.
Yeah, because I'm sure he's attending the best people.
I'm sure he's attending a wonderful preschool.
No, we're all confident. I'm just saying.
It's got all the certificates.
How do you get to a point where, the way I understand school, because this is not what I understand as school, obviously. This is care.
Right.
It's different.
It's care.
But how do you get to school if you can't go to the bathroom and you can't make yourself understood?
Yeah, you can't split a rail.
What do you do?
What the kid's going to do?
But God bless the baby boy Bootsy, and I hope it works out. Well, Claude was here? Did I say
you
he
did?
Was here?
I think you did.
I mean, he is.
Claude may be here full time.
We'll have to see how it plays out.
Well, I mean, if Nigel wins the U.S. Open, he's going to be coming in with some nice cash.
Yeah. So, all right, let me get to what I wanted to start with. Again, we're going to do the show out of WMAL, except we're trying to work on a deal with Clyde's in Friendship Heights to once a month or twice a month do the show live.
That'd be great.
If that happens, everybody's invited. I mean, it'll be like it was a chat
party.
In the sense that people can come and watch the show, and that will make me very happy.
And you're back to full time now, right?
Yeah,
whatever
that
means, four plus days a week.
Yeah,
can
like
I
that.
Tell you that the security guard? I said, I'm here to.
Well, he lives in Hawaii.
Leave aside the picture ID requirement, but he lets me in because he sees that Gary's name is on the list in front of me, and I'm like, yeah, I'm with him. Since I'm getting it, I'm like, I'm going to be on Tony Kornheiser's show. And he goes, whatever happened to Mike Wilbon?
Do you know where Wilbon is today?
Sri Lanka.
China.
No, but these are good guesses. Wilbon is
Asia somewhere.
No, but another good guess. Wilbon is at Magic Johnson's 60th birthday party.
Oh, my God.
I've been meaning to tell you,
Ibiza?
I need to leave a little
where
early.
Where is that? Where's
Saint-Tropez.
Okay. Yeah, that's close.
Saint-Tropez.
You know, Tone, I don't know if you've been through this, but his friends call him Irvin.
Irv.
Yeah. So let me get to the news of the day, which is this hurricane. And first of all, let me say that many of you people listening either live in Florida or have friends or relatives in Florida. My dear friend Jody Forstadt is in Florida. My cousin Marilyn is in Florida. Marilyn's children and grandchildren in Florida. I wish them all safety. I wish them everything good. They both live, Marilyn, I think, lives in Plantation now, and Jody lives in Boca Raton. I can't even begin to say how terrible the forecasting was on this hurricane, where they are confident a week ago it's going to devastate the southeastern coast of Florida. They get everybody to move out of Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 days later,
they go. Kept the president home.
Yeah, 3 days later, they're basically getting people to then move out of Georgia and South Carolina. They have missed by hundreds of miles. Four states, they've missed. And how do you miss? Because this is the kicker for me. It's moving at 1 mile an hour.
Yeah.
1 mile an hour.
It's like missing the 2016 election.
I will say, I have not seen...
Who would do that?
I haven't seen a weather person that loud wrong since Sheehan predicted Josh Doctson would be a star in Washington.
Well, that's because his kid went to TCU,
right.
And he went to TCU. Am I wrong on this,
or
is this
now,
totally
no,
they,
wrong?
They were wrong.
They
but
were
it's,
wrong.
But it's unknowable.
You don't want it to hit anybody. But my point is, the best people in the country are on this one. And if they're wrong, what do you think your local forecaster is going to do? Zero chance.
Well, but I do think Gary mentioned Kip, but I do think Kip educated me to this point, which is that I used to think that there was some sort of like alchemy science that I didn't know
about.
It's
unknowable,
they're
dude.
Just looking at the exact pictures. Same models that are now available to everyone. Person on Earth
right.
online.
Everyone on
when
a computer.
When the European and the GFS change, they change the forecast. I mean, it's not that. I understand there's more to meteorology, obviously, than that. But basically, they're looking at the same.
The models are provided to them.
That's it.
And they interpret them.
That's it. I mean, it's, you know.
And there is.
It is possible that this thing won't ever touch land in the United States of America until perhaps as high as North Carolina.
Right, that is possible.
Why are all these people being evacuated from South Florida?
Because as we have seen, it can change in a moment's notice.
Not if it's going 1 mile an hour, it can't. What are they going to get? Gonna take 5 hour energy and go 50 miles an hour?
Presumably, it
gets that warm water from that warm water draw from the ocean.
Oh,
gives it that energy.
What do you think about
Johnny
this?
Weather?
Am I
warm
crazy?
Water draw.
I think you're right, but I don't think
I want nobody to be hurt.
Right.
So that's the issue. Bahamas.
And you're not crushing anyone for being wrong. You're simply pointing out that they were wrong. But
as long as you are working under the guise of public safety, where you issue these warnings to try and make sure we are all safe, then you get a pass on this. But at what point do you have a disclaimer, a qualifier, a warning? The same way you'd have for dangerous foods, for certain. Habits where you just say, warning, this is likely to change. You know, we make fun of Kip for his, like, do not base this model will not help you with agrarian
right.
Or travel forecasts.
People can and
so,
do lose money.
Past performance is not indicative of future results. Critical. What I'm saying is, if and I'm hoping it never lands at all. I'm hoping that there's no more destruction
right.
than there is now. But at no point does anybody say, wow, we got that one wrong. We're off by hundreds
miles. What they will say is the models changed. They will say they were not wrong when they predicted it because all the models, it was out in the ocean and all the models suggested it was hitting.
You have governors going on television, well-meaning people, trying to take care of the people in their states.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, you've got to get out.
Well,
all the roads are going the other way. You got to get out. And you don't got to get out.
Well, you do got to get. See, this is exactly why you have to get out, because
you don't know.
Because you don't. I mean, talk to the people in Freeport, Bahamas, or Marsh Island, Bahamas, about why you don't want to be in town when it comes around.
I understand that.
Yeah.
I'm just suggesting that at some point, and I think Chris is suggesting this, just say it.
Well,
no
one ever said, let me tell you exactly what this thing is going to do. It's coming to your front door and it's going to not. I mean, there is a sensational.
Yes, they did.
Well, there is
a level of fear casting
that does exist it does drive ratings. It people are interested.
It's definitely sensationalized.
The more, I hate to say it, this is a Trumpian view, but look, when it is hitting Puerto Rico, people are less focused than when they think it is going to hit,
unless you live in Puerto Rico.
But right. I'm saying in the continental United States,
that's right.
It's going to hit here.
That's right.
Now I'm looking at it, and it looks as though the current track, CNN.com, has it basically making landfall.
Wow. Jacksonville?
Never really making landfall, but it's winds hitting Savannah, Charleston, Myrtle Beach,
edge.
Wilmington.
Okay,
missing Orlando.
Yeah.
Missing Florida
hundreds
entirely.
Of miles.
Florida's the longest state in the country, isn't it?
The cone of uncertainty no longer includes Florida, basically. I mean, it misses it. The closest it gets is Daytona Beach, Orlando, which is fascinating. I'll tell you from CNN's perspective. Obviously, we have reporters who, since Friday, have been in Florida, and you get an update every day.
Cantori's in Florida. He's in Stuart, Florida.
You get an update every day, and they have to move. Because, I mean, you know, they're in Miami. Well, now they're in Orlando. Now they're in now they're in Port St. Lucie.
I'm not saying this is terrible. I'm not saying it's the Nats bullpen. What I'm saying is, and these are honest and sincere efforts, but
that's
they all
parallel,
are attempting to persuade you of a very specific thing.
Yep.
And it turns out, and the thing's only moving a mile an hour.
This is why people
purple blob on the TV.
This is why people frequently, every time one of these happens, people choose to not leave. Because they say, it's, you know.
I also
and
think
then it hits.
I do.
And then you're devastated, like in Key West a couple of years ago.
I hate the comparison, but I do think it's relatively apt. Is after the 2016 election, literally every person I know said, how did you guys get it so wrong? And what I said to all of them was, you are, number one, I said, get the hell away from me. Number two, I said, right. I'm not at work right now. Number two, I said, you assume, I think we now all assume certainty in things because it feels like technology is such that you can always get certainty. So
you're inundated with it.
Yes, you go to the doctor and like if they say, oh, we're not really sure, you're like, this guy's a quack. if you, political analysis, I always say to people, look, we're basing it on what's happened before. That doesn't mean, if something different happens, we're cooked. Same thing with weather forecasting. People assume certainty.
Well, because the there's cone science
thing,
involved,
the cone
too.
Thing is moving in this direction. It must be going there. But I read this great thing, Times, over the weekend. They had this graphic. It said people, they've done a disservice with all these graphics because people assume that the graphic means that the eye of the hurricane is heading in that direction. And it's like basically they're broadcasting huge uncertainty.
Right.
But people don't read it as huge uncertainty because
hundreds
it looks—
of miles.
I know. But I think it's because we assume when they say X, you assume it's going to be X unless something radical, one out of a million, and it's not. The chances of it not, they don't convey that well.
I mean, I'm happy if it has minor impact, but I've watched for 4 or 5 days, you know, get out. And now you don't.
Apparently really it was a category out. 5. I didn't even know there
category
was a cat 5.
And now it's down to 3. I think.
I'll say this. Look out, Alabama. Donald Trump.
Oh my God.
So good. I mean, that was the fake news. That was the fake news that made him say Alabama needs to be careful. By the way, Alabama never threatened.
We will we'll take a break.
So
when
true.
We come back, our friend Jason Lockenfora, who we haven't talked to in a while, of CBS Sports, will join us. We'll talk about the sport that matters most, which is football, when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Simply Safe ad, and if you think that what I was just talking about in terms of hurricane fear casting is designed to make you uncomfortable. Wait till you hear this. Did you know on average it takes police 45 minutes to respond to a home security alarm? Almost an hour. When a home security system is triggered, a lot of time police assume it's a false alarm and the call goes to the bottom of the list, but not with Simply Safe Home Security. Simply Safe has video verification technology. That's the old VVT, which helps police get on the scene up to 3.5 times faster. Simply Safe can visually confirm that a break-in is happening, giving police precise information about where an intruder is in a home and whether they're armed. So they have all the information they need to get there faster and catch a criminal as soon as possible. Simply Safe also protects every door, window, and room with 24/7 professional monitoring. They make it easy on you. There's no contract. There's no hidden fees. It has won a ton of awards from CNET to the New York Times as Wirecutter. Prices are always fair and honest. Around-the-clock monitoring starts at just $15 a month. And for listeners to this high-quality podcast, now resuming its fall, winter, and spring and early summer run, Simply Safe has a huge deal going on right now. Go to simplysafe.com/Tony and get free shipping and a money-back guarantee. That's simplysafe.com/Tony today. Let me spell it for you, S-I-M-P-L-I, simply, with an I, not a Y, safe, SAFE.com/Tony.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Paulie Coconuts has sent this. This is an original song. It's about a young boy from the farm and his misadventures in love with a more experienced woman. Good stuff, Paulie writes. I wrote the song in about 20 minutes in 2012. It is a real knee slapper. This is a new band that he's with. The band is Big Brad and the Day Drinkers. Big Brad and the
Love
Day
it.
Drinkers.
Love it.
The band hails from Western Loudoun County, Virginia. By the time you get this, we will have played several festivals in Leesburg and the Loudoun County Music Festival on Sunday, September 1st, this past Sunday. We have dates available this fall and are actively booking for 2020. I always liked Paulie Coconuts.
Yeah.
Lead vocal and rhythm guitar. And he plays in our friend Jason Lockenfora of CBS Sports. And I can only say, as I will say today on PTI, thank God that football is with us again, because it's been a long time since we had anything to really talk about. If you don't mind, Jason, I was going to start with the three largest holdouts.
Sure.
And the number one guy is Ezekiel Elliott. It is sort of being breathlessly reported that, they're talking. Talks are intensifying. Yeah, what does that mean? Are they do you expect him in?
Yeah, I've said if I've answered this question once, I feel like I've answered it 75,000 times over the last 6 months. there was no incentive for him to be a part of their preseason. There's no reason for them to have him be a part of their preseason because the injury risks are great and he wasn't going to see the field anyway. So it was always about the, you know, 5 to 6 days leading up to their first regular season game and where things stood then. And the Cowboys have had enough money on the table now for a long enough time that the bird in hand is very likely to carry the day. And I still strongly believe that. He might as well squeeze till the very end. And that's basically today. You'd have to be there for practice on Wednesday if you really want to have a chance to play week one. Not that it necessarily would be a full role anyway, but, you know, I today is kind of the first real deadline day, and I would be shocked if he doesn't take what's on the table by.
Really? Okay.
You know, end of business today. Or whatever. This isn't a situation where they're lowballing him or they're only offering a couple of years. I mean, he has a chance to get absolute life-changing guarantees, and I can't imagine after all he's been through, and with, frankly, how little he's earned to date, that he walks away from it. And I've been hearing from people very close to him going back to the spring that this was not a guy who was looking to sacrifice millions a week and lost paychecks in the regular season over some sort of ideal.
Okay. So we expect Ezekiel Elliott back with the Cowboys, not in game 5, game 6, game 7, but early.
I think he signed this week. It's just a matter of do they play him this week, given how long he's been out.
Okay. Melvin Gordon of the San Diego Chargers, or whatever they're calling themselves this week.
Yeah.
They basically told Melvin Gordon to pound sand. They said, find your own deal. They don't particularly want him. You don't see him going back there, do you?
Well, he's going to have to really make a sort of macro-level decision here, which is, am I willing to forego an entire year of salary in the hopes that my situation gets better in 2020? The problem is, you know, he's not going to gain a year towards free agency. He's still going to be under the Chargers' thumb for multiple years, especially with the threat of future franchise tags. Not that I think they would go that direction, but they have that leverage. And the position he's playing isn't going to all of a sudden become infinitely more regarded and more valued on the open market or in the Chargers locker room, you know, over the next, whatever, 5 months. So he basically is going to have to decide, is he willing to be so stuck in that he sits out the whole year in hopes that that facilitates a trade next year and more money somewhere else. It's a big risk. This will bleed into the regular season. I don't think a trade is his saving grace right now, just because there's teams that will give them something for him, but then for those teams to then turn around and pay him $11, $12 million a year, there's not people, you know, running down the streets trying, you know, there's not GMs saying, I got to have some of that. So he's in a bind. There's no doubt about it. He hasn't been the level of superstar that that Zeke has been, and he's not the straw that stirs that drink in the Chargers offense. That's still Phillip Rivers. In Dallas, it's Ezekiel Elliott, and everybody in that organization knows you run Dak out there 16 times without Zeke and see what that looks like.
Okay. So he may be looking for a Le'Veon Bell deal, and he may not get that. He's not that great, right?
No, I mean, I think he would take the whatever, 12, 13 a year on even a short-term deal. And I thought ultimately that might be what gets something done for Melvin Gordon, 2 years, $22 million or $20 million. Right. But the Chargers are not willing to even go there.
Okay. Trent Williams. I mean, you have the general manager of the Washington, and this was your story from the beginning.
Yep.
You have the general manager of the Washington Redskins going on television last week and saying he's going to come back and he's going to play for us. You have the coach of the Washington Redskins yesterday basically saying, don't even ask me anymore.
Dead to me.
This is done. Yeah, what do you think?
You know who's going to be numb? Their quarterbacks when they get pummeled week in and week out with the left side of that offensive line. That's who's really going to be numb.
He's not coming back, right?
Not for those guys.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. And I think if there's any good news out of that situation, I kind of touched on this in a column I wrote at CBSSports.com yesterday, kind of looking at the fallout of the weekend and these massive trades that were made. To me, Washington is a winner in so much as, okay, Laremy Tunsil's younger than Trent Williams, you know, and Laremy Tunsil has more upside, but he hasn't had Trent Williams' career, and he hasn't even gotten paid yet, and they got two ones and a two for him. I think, you know, if you look at some of these desperate trades that the Texans have made, if you're the Redskins, you're sitting there saying, well, you know, when we do, the value is going to keep going up. Other teams are going to lose left tackle.
That's right.
Trent Williams is signed for 2 years for $24 million total, I think. That's chump change if he's anything close to the player he's been. There's a trade to be made, and whenever they think that there's the highest value or the best offer, they would be absolute fools and morons not to make it.
When does that value plateau, Jason? Does it just keep going up until the deadline?
Well, I mean, I think at a certain, the deadline is the middle of the year, so at that point, you know, you're only getting a guy for half a year versus being able to get him for 12 games or 14 games. Obviously, it goes down by the week, but I think a lot of it is, unfortunately, in this business in particular, it's injury. And you know what I mean? If it's week three and three potential playoff teams lose their left tackles, and this guy is plug and play, and this guy, again, that's it's not like you're taking on $18 million or $20 million. You know, you're taking on 11 for this year. That's more palatable for some of these owners. I just think it depends on the situations with some of these teams and how much need pops up. But it is inevitable. I mean, there will be a team that's all in for right now that loses a left tackle that says we don't care about, you know what I mean, next year's one. We got to do this now.
So there were teams that made big trades. As you mentioned, Houston, they got rid of Jadeveon Clowney. They sent him to Seattle. And my question is, did they get enough back? And Miami sent some people away. And the question on Miami, take them in whatever order you want, is what exactly is Miami doing? What are they doing?
Basically, what the Houston Texans did is go to John Schneider and say, we're going to give you not a low-risk proposition. We're going to give you a no-risk proposition to take this player off our hands. All it's really going to cost you is $6 or $7 million to rent the player who, you know, is set to make $16 million for a season, because we're going to give you a three. We're going to ask for your three. But then, you know, if he leaves as a free agent next year and he plays well, then you're going to get that back as a comp pick. And, remember we said he's set to make 16. But we're going to pay seven of it, and then you trade us a couple of backup linebackers who would have cost you a couple million more, and what do you say? I mean, it literally, if you think Barkevious Mingo is making a difference, you're out of your mind. This is five teams since 2015. Like, this guy spent more time on the waiver wire than I've spent walking this dog who's on my lap. Like, really? That's the game changer? You know? And then they've got the best linebacking core in the league. So then, you know, a six-round pick from last year, a linebacker who has them upside. Like, and you've got this massive hole on offensive line, and it goes beyond left tackle, and you don't do anything about that. And you overpaid for Duke Johnson, and he's, you know, going in as your starting running back. Like, really? I don't know. That one blows my mind. As for Miami, I thought Laremy Tunsil was the one guy there that they should have extended and blow everything else up. But when somebody offers you more than what the Bears paid for Khalil Mack, like when someone's willing to pay that price, everybody, like there are no untouchables, right? Everybody's available for two ones and the two plus players.
It's unbelievable.
Like, pretty much anybody's available.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be like a quarterback rate. Like, I go back to like the Jay Cutler trade. You know what I mean? He didn't become who the Bears wanted him to become. But the Redskins were in on that one. There were multiple teams bidding. Like, that's a quarterback ransom. And they haven't paid the guy yet. So if you're Laremy Tunsil, I mean, you're looking at Bill O'Brien and how desperate he is. And I mean, I had GM saying, we play on the other team. Like, we're not here to, like, reset the market for players. But, like, how do you not ask for $19 or $20 million a year if you're Laremy Tunsil? Like, they've already mortgaged two giraffes for you. And they did it without having the contract done. I mean, that's what happens in this business when you don't have a general manager and you put way too much authority in the hands of someone who, frankly, has had a difficult enough, you know, time doing his day job coaching the team. And, you know, now he's in charge of the roster, too. Godspeed.
Yeah. So, all right, that wraps up Houston and Miami. Miami obviously playing for next year at this point. Who do you think will be the best rookie quarterback? And you don't have to just stay in the first round. Is there somebody out there that you say, that guy's good?
You mean like in sort of the short-term tone or like over the totality?
No. This year. This year, short-term.
Their careers, who looks the best this year? I mean, there's a lot I like about Haskins, but that and he will play, I think, by the middle of the season. He may have to play sooner because of injury. I just, behind that line, it's going to be very difficult to assess. You know, I'm just kind of going through them in my head. You know, Daniel Jones, I don't know. I think the Giants are in an untenable situation. Regardless, I don't think they're going to be a winning team, and I don't like what he has around him. But if he comes in late, he may, you know, he may look the part this year. I'm intrigued by the kid Cincinnati took. He had a really good preseason. I think he may play this year because they're not married to Andy Dalton. And actually, if Zach Taylor is who a lot of people tell me he is, you know, Finley, that quarterback from NC State could be put in, you know, in a position to do something interesting. Kyler Murray will have the best stats, you know, right. And he's the only one who's coming in hot, like being handed the franchise. But Maron, I mean, they killed Josh Rosen last year. I don't see how this scenario is that much better unless you believe that Cliff Kingsbury really is such a genius that he's going to, with his quick passing game and his three-step drops and all his bells and whistles, that's going to overcome what still looks like to be a really bad offensive line, a team that I don't think can stop anybody on defense. And, you know, Kyler Murray is not built like a Cam Newton or an Andrew Luck. So I don't know. I mean, that's got the most feast or famine potential. The durability, all that stuff. I mean, who knows? It's going to be a very interesting experiment.
All right, we'll get you out of here on this before we also, well, we'll ask about Copper, obviously. But is there a team that concerns you the most in the sense where you go, you know, the bottom could drop out of this team? It really could. You people are wrong about this team. They could be going down the drain.
I don't know about the bottom dropping out, but I have been a Bears skeptic for really the entirety of last season. And how much Trubisky's play drops off once he gets off that 15-play script that they worked on in practice. And then, you know, once that's over, just look at any metric of him from that point on versus the rest of the game. They played – he never had a play behind last year. He played something like 9% of his snaps from behind last year. I mean, an wow. ungodly low number.
Right.
Like, he played with the lead or tied all the time. Him having to chase a game – I just don't know. Again, I'm a skeptic. They lost Vic Fangio. That defense can't be as good. Sorry, we're getting work Whoa. Done on the house.
Not yet, Cop.
I tried
not
to find yet. A spot where he would not maybe hear the drill.
But he's better, right? He's feeling better.
I guess, but all this stuff, he's probably going to re-tear his knee with all these, because no. he's reacting to every sound that happens in his house. But I'm sorry. Where
That's all right. True, you were knocking Trubisky, but we care more about the dog. We do.
Yeah, no, I think the defense will slip. They play a much more difficult schedule. I just think, like, if you told me the Bears went from 12 wins to, like, 7, I personally would not be shocked.
Wow. Do you have podcast news? Are we still doing this podcast?
We're I'm in a podcast free zone. If anybody's looking for a podcast partner, hit me up. I'm a free agent. So we'll plug my full time employer and say I cannot wait to get back on the air with CBS this weekend Good. Without a barking dog in the background on the NFL Today and also on that other pregame show on the CBS Sports Network, and that runs leading up to the NFL Today from like 8 to noon.
Give Copper our best and take care of him. Thank you, Jason.
I will. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Jason Lockham for CBS Sports. It's
Fun.
Just, it means that the podcast is back for me when I hear him because I just think he's great. And I loved working with him when I did at the Washington Post, and I'm very happy for his success. We will take a break. We will have news with Michael Kornheiser when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Bespoke Post ad. Every month I get sent a box of awesome from Bespoke Post. And I have to tell you, there are so many unique items that you'd never think to buy for yourself. Then it says in your own words, describe things that you've received.
So I need to be honest here. We received an email asking for you to select a new Bespoke Post box to arrive. Let's just
you didn't
say
tell me this.
I took your box of awesome.
Oh, okay. What's in it?
Wow.
So the box of awesome is actually a cold brew carafe. And you know, with the kids at home, it's a little bit harder to get the hot coffee going, and it's sometimes a burning hazard. So cold brew coffee is fantastic. I have the carafe in the fridge right now, and it stays up for about a week or two, so it really is helping us out.
Nice.
I'm so sorry. You're looking at me.
No. I'm fine with that. I wouldn't have done that. It wouldn't have occurred to me. It's not anything I really want.
Well, you don't drink caffeine.
No, I don't. So I'm really happy that you have that then. Visit boxofawesome.com. Answer a few short questions that will help them determine the boxes that fit you best. Each box goes for under $50, but has more than $70 worth of unique gear waiting inside for you, like cold brewed coffee and how you do it. The first of each month, you'll receive an email with your box details. If you're not feeling that month's box, just skip it. From barrel aging kits to limited edition cigars, weekender bags to classy dop kits, Bespoke Post offers essential goods and guidance for the modern man. To receive 20% off your first subscription box, and that's for people that listen to this show, go to boxofawesome.com and you enter the code TONY at the checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, code TONY for 20% off your first box. Bespoke Post, themed boxes for guys who give a damn.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Crooked Coast. Luke, John, and Ben are Crooked Coast. Luke Vos of Crooked Coast here with our latest song that we've been playing all summer long. I know Labor Day marks the unofficial end of summer, but we'd like to prolong the season one more day with our song, fittingly enough, called Summer. Thanks for always playing our music on the show, and although the summer's over, we will keep a stage side table ready for you if you ever find yourself in Falmouth in 2020. Falmouth is in the Cape Cod area, right?
Yes. It is.
Because these guys are Massachusetts guys, Crooked Coast, lovely. And Michael, if people like Crooked Coast want to play music for us and get on the show, how do they do so?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com. And the Cape's been having a tough summer. Shark attacks are on the rise.
Is that right?
And also, they've been having these micro tornadoes.
Haven't seen it.
Do you know
that.
I've never
what
been to
that?
Cape Cod?
Is that a tornado?
I think it's a small tornado.
Jeez.
I've never been there? No, never been.
Oh, it's really
I've
gorgeous.
Never been. I know some people who are there right now waiting out the hurricane, which is now a little bit closer
well,
to
I
their
mean,
house.
Basically,
than it was
based on
year,
how fast
ago.
It's moving, they should wait until mid-October by the time it gets them. I mean,
1 mile an hour.
Yeah.
Like, you'd sit in your house and go, get out of here.
You've seen the pictures
please,
out of the Bahamas,
here.
Though.
Terrible.
I mean, it's just
terrible.
Basically sitting over the Bahamas.
Terrible.
Yeah.
All right, Nigel often does the news, but today he's not here, so Michael will do the news.
We're actually going to start with a local story, Dad. We're going to go to the 20015. Reports are saying that over the weekend, an older, balder man was seen holding a newborn. Any truth to this?
Yes, I think it was Saturday... I think I held the hammer for the first time.
Wow.
I
held the hammer. There is visual proof of this. There are some pictures that were taken. I held him for a good 45
TMZ
seconds to a minute.
Close to a minute.
Close to a full minute.
And he said, get this thing off of me.
The back said, held up?
Yeah. I just said to Liz, okay, I think I've
got
proven.
A tea time.
Now, that is far earlier than when you
the
held
baby boy
Bootsy,
Bootsy
right?
And so we arrive at the house. Bootsy is now fully mobile, so he runs into the house, and he can say Tony. He goes,
yeah,
Tony,
great.
Tony.
Oh, that's great. It's great.
And Dad goes, don't worry, I got him.
He takes the
Bootsy into the living room. The next thing we know, Dad's back about 2 minutes later. We're like, well, who's watching the kid? And he goes, hey, he's fine.
He's in the house. What is he going to do?
Totally. Yeah, no.
Yeah, stop
nothing
it.
That ever happens.
What is he going to do? Light a fire? Yeah. There's no matches near him.
Meanwhile, he's in the driver's seat starting the car. Yeah,
just with a lighter.
Yeah, what? I see my finger fits in this plug.
Yeah, I got bored.
We're going to go to baseball, Dad. We have Nats lose 7-3 to the Mets. Doesn't
lose 7-0. They get 3 runs in the bottom of the ninth.
Well, it's almost like they never showed
close.
Up to the game.
Yeah.
It looked
same
like...
Same feeling as against the Orioles when they lost 2-0.
Game.
And you go, wow, they're hitting it like crazy. What happened here?
Well, it's this weird reality about divisional baseball. You coming in off the sweep against the Marlins, feeling pretty good about where you are in the wild card. And they've played the Mets terribly all season long. Actually, the Mets looked like they were the well-rested team, not the ones who were coming in off of Sunday Night Baseball against the Phillies. Never really had anything going against Syndergaard. Pretty comfortable game, and you don't really think their prospects, even with Scherzer tonight, are looking good for Game 2 and 3.
Certainly not against DeGrom tonight.
I don't know about that.
Crowd behind him. How about that crowd yesterday?
Not much.
Let's go
dozens,
Mets.
Dozens.
Barry's Religion wrote about
25,000.
And half
Gee, you
Mets
can't
fans.
Send Joe Ross out there. He's got a 6.17 ERA.
He was 3-0 with a 1-point-something well, in that, his last
no,
four.
Yeah, but 6.17
yeah,
overall.
Yeah, I know.
Look, they've been hitting great. They're starting pitching of their big three or four when Scherzer comes back in there. The starting pitching has been great. The hitting is the people on the team have realized our bullpen is so terrible that we've got to get a 4-run or 5-run lead. They battle back. They lose the lead, they get it back. And I think if there's one takeaway from the last 2 weeks of baseball, if not the last 3 or 4 weeks of baseball, if not the season, is you got to sign Anthony Rendon.
Yeah.
So doesn't matter how much money
it's
going
to be a lot harder than it would have been a few months ago.
I was at the game Sunday. That was a win.
Humble brag.
9-3. And chance of MVP were everywhere. He hit a home run. He had 3 or 4 RBIs.
He's in the discussion.
He eclipsed Zim's team record for RBIs.
111 RBIs. He set the team record for RBIs on September 1.
Yeah.
Right, that was Sunday.
And frankly, that walk-off win, game one against the Marlins, was necessary just to set the tone.
I don't know how you... I don't think that you lost a lot of goodwill. And Michael knows this better than me, but I don't think you lost a ton of goodwill not signing Bryce. I think if they do not sign Rendon, it would be much more problematic. I think he is much more well-liked broadly by the team, by the fan base.
Plays a position that is not as easily replaceable as Bryce
and
Harper.
Plays it well.
And I think he's more respected around the league. So it's not just what would that do to the fan base? What would that do to the rest of the players and the execs around the league as to how serious this team is?
That's I don't even know about the executives. I'm talking about players who will not look at this franchise as a free agent destination anymore because they'll say they lost their two biggest hitters in successive years.
Let them go.
You can live without Harper or not, you need to acknowledge he was the number one player on the team, and now that is
no
Rendon.
Question.
But that works for execs too. You get a player in the room, and you just say, "Well, look at what this team has done. They're not serious about you."
That's right.
Elsewhere in the league, Atlanta continues to roll with another comfortable win. Phillies are trying to pick up some ground against Cincinnati, win 7-1, and Houston has a nice win yesterday, coming off of a third no-hitter for Verlander.
Justin Verlander, Mike Trout is the biggest lock for the Hall of Fame. Justin Verlander is the second biggest lock for the Hall of Fame of any player out there right now. Well, and I guess Albert Pujols is right there. But he has 3 no-hitters. Only 2 people in the history of baseball, Nolan Ryan with 7 and Sandy Koufax with 4, have more. Nobody...
That's pretty good
they're
company.
The only people
7's a big number,
with
man.
With more. Justin Verlander has been a great pitcher in 2 different spots. He's a fabulous talker, Justin Verlander.
That's great.
And he went and he basically won the World Series for Houston a couple of years ago when they acquired him.
36, Michael?
Yeah.
35, 36. I mean,
I believe so.
And Cole, did you see Cole and Verlander became the first teammates with back-to-back 14 strikeout outings?
And cool to see this is the second no-hitter against the same team on the road. And that's after a first-inning walk.
Yeah. And they won the game yesterday, even though Christian Yelich, and you talk about MVP, Chris, there's Bellinger and there's Yelich, too.
Yeah.
Yelich goes up there in the bottom of the 9th, down 1, and bangs 1 out.
Yep.
So they lose in the 10th, but Yelich performs. Those 3 guys, they perform. You can't have a bad MVP in the National
League. The case for Rendon is Bellinger isn't going to play a competitive game for 3 months.
Not his fault.
I totally agree, and the Brewers are probably going to miss the playoffs.
Not his fault.
Rendon is now hitting .337, 32 home runs, 111 RBIs. I mean, his average has gone 25
and if you
points.
Isolate
you
those
can
numbers,
win this in September.
Isolate those numbers just against the division. If you think about some of the most memorable hits, you're thinking about that grand slam, which effectively won a game against the Braves. Beginning of August,
and the Dodgers' cushion might cost Bellinger some at bats.
Yeah, you just forget how many home runs Bellinger's hitting. Just look at what the team is producing. And as you look at storylines going into September, obviously you're trying to see what's going on with the wild card in the American League. Is there any chance that the Red Sox can make some late push to trying to defend?
Looks like they're out.
Are the A's going to hold on to that or get into that
Oakland,
last spot?
Oakland, Tampa Bay, and Cleveland seem to be. That seems to be the
race. And then in the National League, is it going to be 1-1 for the Central and the East? And in the East, is it going to be something with the Mets and the Phils trying to make that late September push?
Did you know, I wasn't paying any attention. That's just one other storyline to watch. You assume that the Dodgers are going to have the best record in the National League by far. The Braves have now won 12 of 14. So the Dodgers are 90-50. The Braves are 85-54. I mean, it's not undoable that the Braves catch them. I mean,
well, the Dodgers have nothing to play for.
Nothing. But other than that, if you care about home field in the playoffs, but I mean, 85-54. They have been on an absolute burner in the American League.
Just take a look at how many times the Yankees have gotten to a big number, 90 wins over this last 15-year period. I know they do not play each other, by the way, anymore.
Yankees 90-49, Astros 90-49, tied for both best record.
I know you want to get to college football. Big storyline was, say, in the SEC, was there trouble outside of those top few teams? You had Clemson winning big. You had Alabama winning big. Any other scores you wanted
Clemson
to see?
Clemson is not in the SEC.
Right, but I'm looking at sort of the top.
Yeah, no. Tennessee lost at home, I believe.
They did.
I think Tennessee. So that's terrible.
Yep.
Florida State, which is in the ACC, lost at home to Boise State.
Well, they were up 31-13
Had no points in the second half. Florida State used to be a big-time power. South Carolina, which is in the SEC, lost to North Carolina. Mack Brown in his first game as a head coach again at North Carolina. I don't know if you were willing to give 78 points if you liked Maryland against Howard.
If you had 78, Warner Wolf style.
79-0 Now, here's my feeling. I don't know. There's a tremendous disparity in talent. But that's a local school you beat. Those are kids that know your kids. You beat them 79-0 I did not watch the game. Because when I tuned in with about 6 minutes to go in the second quarter, it was 49-0 And I said, what is the point of this? But if you're the Howard coach, if you're Howard players, did Maryland run it up? I didn't watch.
Well, it was.
I don't know.
I think it was 56 at half.
Whoa.
And everyone was playing.
Okay. But if you put everybody in,
but they,
and you're not passing.
Yeah, they were. Well, I mean, can we agree that in the first half you can do whatever you want to do?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So then it was 56, and then of course it was pointed out that 79 was the number of Jordan McNair.
So you think they had attempted to get to 79?
So there was some speculation, at least in cyber, that it was sort of a tip of the hat, which was oddly reported. Like, everyone seems to forget the circumstances of that young man's death and the notion that they would have somehow used it as an excuse to... I don't know. The whole thing was sort of icky to me. But 79 is a monstrous number.
It really is.
I mean, 11 touches and a safety is how
it's
they did it.
It's really tremendous. Did you watch last night? I watched a little bit of Notre
Dame. Of course. Shout out to Coach Brian Polian.
There was a fantastic moment with very little time left in the second quarter where on three successive plays, there were fumbles. On three successive plays. Unbelievable. And Notre Dame ended up scoring at the end of the half. Notre Dame, it was 14-14, and it ended up 35-17 in favor of Notre Dame.
So. I hadn't heard that we've touched on it, but I just wanted to note a score
of
note.
You've been listening, haven't you?
Davidson Wildcats, 27. Georgetown Hoyas, 20. So Davidson ranked right outside the top 25,
what did you
I think.
No, so. What did you say they're massive?
No,
they're
Wildcats. Not. Davidson is like also receiving votes, I think, in the top 25.
No, they're not.
Yeah, I'm not going to check it, but I'm pretty sure that's right.
No, and I think that's a different ranking.
Yeah, no, that's
are
it.
Are they so, D1? They're not D1, Davidson, are they?
No, not in football.
Yeah, and Georgetown's not D1.
Double A.
Yeah, but it's the second.
So anyway, good start to the season. Thanks. Back to you, Tom.
It's not quite Ivy League football.
You got anything else?
Yeah, so what's great is, let's take you behind the scenes. So Liz has been pushing that story for
Hell
the last
yeah.
2 days.
I won't. I like to get
we
it
We got
to
talk about this.
No, Dad, you were mentioning sports on last night. I think it's. I know we have Nigel coming on to talk U.S. Open.
Yeah.
Did you have a chance to watch Rafa last night?
Rafa.
I didn't really pay attention to it because I was watching the football game. But when I woke up this morning, I saw that Nadal had won in usual spectacular fashion. But he had a friend there.
He had a friend. If you looked up, you saw the big cat in one of the sky boxes.
Yeah.
The second to last point that Rafa won was just vintage, and the fist pump that Tiger Woods gave his friend. Honestly, it looked like he knocked his kid out of the way to just cheer to Rafa. But it's really cool to see two athletes in that position who have, whether they're friends or just they respect each other. It was fun to see Tiger be a fan up in the crowd.
I agree with that. I agree. And Nadal afterwards was interviewed and, have you ever played golf with him? And he goes, I don't want Tiger to see my swing. It's not that
Tiger. But
that
was nice. Tiger,
you don't see that a lot.
Tiger looks stacked. Oh,
yeah, he does.
God, yeah. He looks huge.
Tiger looks great.
Jacked.
Nadal, by the way, and Nadal is extraordinarily muscular. Well, he's only about 5'9" or 5'10", right? I mean, he's not that big a guy.
Battle of the receding hairlines between those two guys.
Good. And it's, you're fit if you play that game, though.
All right. Oh, yeah, tennis?
Yeah, I got one more story for you.
Go ahead.
So we're going to throw you a wild card here. This is, we're going down to...
It's not the dog park.
Read that story. Search
dog park story.
Search
crazy.
Dog park Chevy Chase, and make sure you pour yourself a nice glass of Sauvignon Blanc.
That's right. Sit on your
enjoy
porch.
The ride.
Sit on your
South
porch.
Carolina Turtle Patrol Group finds two-headed hatchling. Yes, Chris Elizabeth, this is a story for you.
Oh, gross.
A group that monitors sea turtles in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, has reported finding a two-headed loggerhead hatchling.
Wow.
News outlets report Sea Turtle Patrol Hilton Head says the hatchling was found alive and released into the ocean.
That's a mistake.
Is there any, why? Will it be eaten because it has two heads?
No.
You want that thing breeding?
Two versus one.
I would think it's better because it would see any predator coming.
Can I go back to what's maybe buried in the story? There is a watch group for turtles?
Oh, yeah, man. Turtles need our help.
Yeah, you remember the turtle you ran into out at Rehoboth back in the early
trying to cross the road? These people just drive around the country trying to pull turtles out of roads.
No, I didn't run it over. It was in the street.
These questions come up every day. You need a patrol.
I think that's good. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we will have Old Guy Radio, and we will allegedly talk to Nigel if he's awake. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is Help Me Rhonda by the Beach Boys. In terms of critical commentary, it's a great song. In terms of why we're playing it, it is Al Jardine's 77th birthday today. And Al Jardine sings lead on this. Al Jardine took the place of a kid named David Marks like 55 years ago with the Beach Boys and has been there ever since. I saw them within the last 3 or 4 years. I saw Brian Wilson, and Al Jardine was with him. And Al Jardine's son plays and sings, and he sounds so much like an original Beach Boy.
Cool.
It's frightening. He's also, Al Jardine, not the biggest guy in the world, and his kid is pretty big. So, but it was just... It was wonderful to see that is passed along, that talent is passed along. Cool. And Al Jardine, I don't think he tours. Maybe he does tour with Brian Wilson. You know, there's like three different Beach Boy tours that are out there
is
now.
Brian?
Mike Love's got one, and Brian Wilson's got one, and it's possible Bruce Johnston has one for all I know. I don't even know anymore.
Yeah, Brian Wilson is, I just looked it up, 2019 tour. I mean, I think he just kind of, did he play?
Brian Wilson is 77. Brian Wilson and Paul McCartney are born within 3 days of each other.
Did he play most of the stuff you wanted to hear, or was it more like from
limited,
Smile?
It was a limited thing. He's not what
no,
he was.
No,
he's not what he was. So they had like the backup group was great, and then they probably cut off Brian's mic, and that's be my guess.
I mean, so he's basically playing a lot in the West Coast.
He
primarily.
Plays. Well, he plays. Yeah. All right. So we're going to get into what we normally do. In terms of Old Guy Radio and talk amongst ourselves about topics in my life. But Nigel is joining us now. Nigel has been at the U.S. Open for over a week now. What do you do? What is your job there?
Well, mostly I sit around and I eat, so that's a nice day for me.
Right. So, but do you have a particular job?
Oh, yeah. I'm the court reporter for the tournament, so when I'm out there, they'll say... If they're at Arthur Ashe Stadium, as they were last night during the Taylor Townsend match, they'll go to me during the broadcast for US Open Radio, and they'll say, "All right, well, Nigel, tell us what's going on in the stands there." And again, as I said, most of the time I'm eating something, so I'll just say, "Food's quite good, and I think there's a match going on as well."
So you have access to players. They actually, it is part of their job description to talk to you.
That's right. Yeah, I've spoken. I haven't had a chance to speak with. With like the top seeds, you know, like Federer and Nadal, but everybody else, even this bloke, I don't know how close you've been watching this, but Daniil Medvedev, have you ever heard of him?
Is he the Russian that everybody hates?
Yes,
yes.
That's the bloke. Yes,
yeah.
Because he apparently he gave the TK salute to the crowd the other night.
Fantastic.
While he was playing.
Oh, he's a fan of the show, maybe.
That's good.
Nigel, does this require you to talk to normal people, like in the stands, like interact with them? Because that sounds absolutely terrible.
right, somebody's clearly made a grievous error in giving me a microphone and walking around. But yeah, no, I talked to people in the stands. Oh. I talked to all the players.
Good.
Yeah, no, it's quite fun. It really is. And I'd never been to a Grand Slam event, not even Wimbledon, my home country, for obvious legal reasons. But just walking around the grounds. Yes, exactly. But walking around the ground to just, you know, in Arthur Ashe Stadium, it's just, it's just fantastic.
Where are you staying? Are you staying in Manhattan? Are you staying in Queens? Where are you staying? And do you have heated toilet seats like Sands does?
No, I'm staying in lovely Queens. Actually, it is quite lovely. We're in the LaGuardia Plaza Hotel, which sadly does not have heated toilet seats.
Yeah, surprising.
And I'm looking at my closet right now, and I've got an ironing board, but no bathrobes.
No bathrobes.
And well, how are you transported to and from the stadium? Does a car pick you up, or do you just take the train?
No, there's a shuttle, an ESPN shuttle that takes everybody over there, leaves every every half hour.
An ESPN shuttle.
Have you challenged either of the McEnroes to a match? I could take you.
I have not run into either the McEnroes, but yes,
they don't ride the shuttle.
Are you given a uniform? Do you have like an official shirt? Do you have stuff like that? Are there perks with this job?
I've gotten two shirts that just these black shirts that say U.S. Open on them. They're quite fetching.
Right,
but size extra small.
That's about it.
Do you get per diem on food? Because it's pricey in the arena. It's pretty pricey.
Oh yes, so. Your identification badge that you've got has got a barcode on it,
right?
And they give you, I think it's $45 or $50 a day.
Nice.
In good money, and you can spend that anywhere. You could either go out and have a pint of beer around the ground.
Get a couple slices of New York style pizza, maybe. While you're up there.
Oh yes,
it's those things. Hamburgers are like $20, right? I mean, that's not a lot of money to eat all day.
Famiglia's is quite good up there. It's very New York.
But you'd love this because the dining areas for the media dining is absolutely brilliant. I've had these great pasta dinners.
Oh, good, good.
Taco night the other day. Yeah, no, it's almost. I was actually blown away by how good the food is. Yes.
Did you meet Tiger last night? Did you see him and meet him?
I did not. No, my producer said, all right, she could go out to the crowd and took the Tiger, and I couldn't get within 100 yards of him. But yeah, it was great to see him on the camera, pumping his fist for Nadal. And by the way, I'd never seen Nadal play up close. So I don't know if you saw the highlights from that last night, but he's wearing that sleeveless jersey.
Yeah, he's muscular good.
He can get away with that. I cannot. But
humble brag tone? My producer.
Well, I think that's nice, though. He's got a
producer.
He
thinks he's better than us now.
No, he doesn't. So all the seeds are getting beat. So now it's become a geriatric tournament, right? I mean, now it's just Serena, Federer, and Nadal, right? That's all there is.
Well, yeah, I mean, the kid who beat Taylor Townsend last night she's like, I don't know, 16, 17 years old, Bianca Andreescu. She's terrific. And there's some really young players who are playing quite well. On the American side, yeah, I mean, it's still Nadal and Federer now that Djokovic has gone out. But when you watch them play, I mean, they're just better than everybody else.
Yes.
I mean, they're just unbelievably good. So and they've never met. Nadal and Federer have never met at the U.S. Open. So now there's a chance that they could meet in the finals,
so
and that would be
years.
Their first meeting ever.
You'd think they'd have crossed paths and one would introduce himself to the other.
Well, they've never met.
Hey, that's great reporting, Nigel. But back to you, Tom.
Well, thank you very much, Chris.
All right, but you're having a good time?
I am having a brilliant time, yes.
Good.
Although I do miss being back there. I am terribly homesick. I'd look forward to coming back, but I'll get back, I think, sometime in the overnight. I'm driving back after the last match, so I'll be home around midnight or so on next Sunday, and I'll be back in studio with you on Monday.
Well, if you value your job, you might want to speed up that timetable a little bit. It's going quite smoothly.
Yeah. Claude is calling himself the new Nigel.
Enjoy yourself, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a good time.
See you, Nigel.
All right. Thanks, Tony.
That's Nigel, of course.
Bye-bye, sport.
The chances he's just in charge of the T-shirt cannon?
Yeah, it's just that'd be so great.
He's
home for a staycation
in
the basement apartment.
He's guarding the huge oversized tennis ball.
So I normally take a lot of time to talk about particular things that have happened to me in the last week or so, and now it'll be day by day. And I'm not going to talk about my leg, and I'm not going to talk about golf. I'll get to those during the rest of the week.
Well, you have to give a short... I mean, people care about your condition. Like,
it's bad. Yeah. It's bad.
Not
better. It is tolerable. It's better. It's not good. It's different. I can't walk without pain. I cannot walk without pain.
That's not good.
And I cannot stride out. So I, you know, that's just the way it is. And if this is the rest of my life, I'll get an operation. I mean, I won't live. I don't want however long I have left, which isn't much. I don't want it to be like this. But I do want to talk about one thing. And we, and it's, this was on Saturday night. Michael and Liz and Kate and Bootsy and the Hammer and Elizabeth came over for dinner. And we were attempting, it was our plan to grill. It was our plan to grill.
Taco night.
And Michael, yes, and Michael lit the grill outside on the deck. Please take it from there.
So Dad has just your standard Dad gas Weber. And this has been around for a number of years. So I light the grill, I preheat it. It no longer has the ignition button that works. So you have to turn on the burner.
Drop the match in and pray.
Drop the match and just run away as fast as possible. Yeah. Yeah. So my sister, being the chef that she is, she wants this up to temp. So I get this thing hot. I come back about 10 minutes later. Oh, a little bit of smoke is coming out of the back of the grill. I haven't used it in a while. I know Dad has used it. So I just think it's a little bit of fat burning off. Previous
sure.
cook, he didn't run it after. Come back a few minutes later after I give it a scrub. The smoke has turned to black, and Liz's experiences from the kitchen say whenever there is, you know, that black fire,
you're not getting
you
a new pulp.
You have a grease fire.
Yeah.
God, Cliff.
White smoke, you're getting the new pulp. Yeah. Black smoke, you're not.
So we go out, and this actually is a grease fire. The trap underneath is just fully inflamed.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, I've only dealt with these small little flare-ups.
Don't like, throw water on
just
it.
Just sprinkle a little bit of water. It's like, that's the worst thing you could ever do.
Don't throw water on a grease fire.
So I'm just sitting there. Henry's upstairs with Liz. Bootsy's with Kate. I look at Dad. He is a fire extinguisher.
You bet
baby. All the years we've made fun
been
of him.
Dying to use
for
this
the
thing,
fire
right?
extinguisher.
He's been wanting to use this thing 30 years.
There's no chance that this thing is actually still up to code or works. It, in fact, is live. Liz charges it. We open it up.
Liz pulls the pin on it.
Liz turns off the burners initially. I then open the lower doors to try and get the gas, because at this point, the flames are only inches.
Is your deck composite or is it wood?
Oh, straight wood, and it's aged.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, it's seasoned
as
wood.
As am I.
Yeah, seasoned wood. So you're trying to get the gas not only off, but to see if we can take it off of the hook to get it away from the fire.
Right, you don't want the propane tank.
Now, this is where I'm revealing a little bit about myself. Do you ever water your grass and you pretend that you're a fireman and you put the hose over your shoulder?
Negative.
As you just go,
have not done that.
Torque!
Yeah.
So Liz charges the fire extinguisher.
But then
doors
she,
open.
She doesn't want to, she's nervous.
She can't handle the heat. She has to get out of the kitchen.
Oh,
I drop to a
quite
knee.
Literally.
And
I've
practiced this, so I remember my training.
I was made for this moment.
Initially,
that's why you lift
all the weights. Initially, I have the fire extinguisher pointed at myself.
Left knee, right shoulder, or right knee, left shoulder?
I'm down on my right knee, so I'm really at eye level, and I pretend I have the hose over the shoulder. I got the fire extinguisher out.
And you're hoping it's going to work, because it's at least 25 years old.
Oh, yeah.
It is,
and,
at least.
And the extinguisher.
Yes,
and that
yes.
is definitely the only fire extinguisher in the house.
Are there concerns about the fire?
No, wait, like, that's not true. I have a fire extinguisher upstairs as well.
Hey, you got to have one on every level.
Yeah, got it upstairs as well. Got another
so
one.
So how close is the grill to the house or to a deck railing? Like, are there concerns that something else is going to catch fire?
Not at this point, because it's still enclosed in a metal drum. So you'd think it would burn out before then. There's there are things we could suffocate.
Flames are not flying around.
Okay. It's contained to within the grill.
And it's far enough away from the house that my biggest fear was actually that Dad was going to go toddle over to him and be like, hey, what's going on over here? And that he would just get a face burn or something on his arm.
So you're saying he's a danger to himself.
He is a danger. I'm blaming him for this.
Ingleside, here we come.
There were three people
he
on the deck, and I was one
of them. He just can't be
trusted
to be alone.
Yeah. So I dropped to one knee, and flames go out. You think you got it, but these grease fires, they keep popping back. I had to go through about three quarters of that bottle, and your heart rate gets up a little bit. This was pretty scary. And the best is, Liz is upstairs in my childhood bedroom with Henry. I go up about 5 minutes later.
That's good. Get to the highest point in the house just in case it catches fire.
I still got that sort of performance high. I go up. I'm I want to talk about what I just went through.
Right.
She was like, yeah, there's a lot of noise outside. What was going on? I'm like, nothing. just grilling.
And then the residue, right? I mean, that grill's pretty much toast at that point.
I told Dad he immediately was on the phone with Strohsnyder's.
Yeah. So I went to Strohsnyder's the next day. I went the
you
next
call
day.
Call Dan, Home Depot Dan?
No.
Have him bring you out one?
No. I went to Strohsnyder's the next day.
Are you the leader of the store?
I walked in and I said, I need to talk to a grill person. I said, okay. And I talked to a grill person. I believe his name was Kenneth. We went outside and I described what had happened and what we needed. And I got something that's pretty much
good.
The same. Is it more money than I thought it would be?
Yeah, good ones are expensive, but a great time of year to buy a grill.
You know, I guess.
Literally, end of summer. So.
Well,
They're trying to move. Yeah.
There was no, Michael had said to me, they'll probably have a Labor Day sale. They did not have a Labor Day sale.
Oh, Matt Frey saw you coming.
They didn't have a Labor Day sale. But
I love that the takeaway is we had this dangerous experience, and the voicemail I get and what you continue today is, I think I got overcharged on this grill.
No, I'm not saying I got overcharged. I'm saying I paid probably a fair trade price. Sure. Somebody could have undercut it, but I didn't want to bother to do that. I followed
another Weber?
Yes, I followed my son's instructions.
Years. Nor did you want to build the grill yourself.
No.
Why would you ever do that?
You
pay for this, but by the way, to me, it is worth it. They come over, they assemble, and they take away the old one.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Did you get a new fire extinguisher?
I did indeed. Good man. When I was in Strohsnyder's, I made sure to get another fire extinguisher that is in the exact same spot as the first one. And let me say, I am extraordinarily proud of my daughter and my son because they handled that situation perfectly, and it took a certain amount of bravery to do it, and we got lucky. I think we got lucky in this regard that the fire extinguisher worked. Because if it didn't work, honestly, I guess we would have sat and tried to wait the thing out. I don't know. Did you have any idea what to do if it didn't work?
Although
I had another one upstairs.
Talcum powder, dirt.
Had another one. I tell people all the time, here's what you get as a wedding gift for people. A fire extinguisher and steak knives. Okay?
Yeah.
If you never have to use the fire extinguisher, great. But we just had to use it. Never in my life have I been in that circumstance. And my son was great. Great.
So. What you do is if the fire extinguisher doesn't work, you leave and buy a new house.
Okay.
That's how it goes. Problem solved.
That's the move.
That's the story, and I wanted to tell that one, and we will take a break. We will come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Of all the restaurants I've loved before, at Chatta, it was filled with lore. A place to mix and mingle, I dedicate this jingle to that fun but failed old joint. Of all the dives I've eaten,
this is so good.
This one owned by four has bins. So what will they do now to take another bow? It could be a lousy bookstore.
That is Brian in Oak Hill, I assume Oak Hill, Virginia.
Huge.
That is absolutely great.
Huge.
He writes, he'd been to Chatter several times since it opened. I'll miss the easy camaraderie and good food attached as my jingle tribute to a place that now lives only in memory. Let me just say this, that I found this out. I was over at the John Connors BP station the other day, and he was saying, you know, a lot of people post on some local Chevy Chase blog or whatever
Listserv.
In God's
Internet.
Name it is. And they talk about how terrible it is that Chatter is gone. If you people had gone there and spent some money, it wouldn't be gone. It's gone because we lost money. It's gone because you never showed up. I'm not bitter. I'm not bitter at all. But let's not have revisionism about this. We were a business and you didn't support it. Okay, we tried. We failed. Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank Jason LaCanfora of CBS Sports for coming on list. Let me thank Nigel for interrupting his busy day and coming
from
on
the Us Open.
Let me thank the sponsors today, Bespoke Post and Simply Safe. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Radio.com. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave a review. I mean, seriously, we were in business. And you didn't support us.
To be fair, the only support you had happened to be from the listeners.
You rejected us.
That's right. I'm talking about locals.
He's talking about people who don't listen.
The bigger issue was the cost of some of the renovations that was too much of a burden to try and ever get past.
People in Chevy Chase are complaining. You should have shut up about complaining. You should have been there. And if you were there, thank you very much. And now you're complaining about your dog park.
Yeah, go back to the dog park.
Yeah.
To quote Jay-Z, you're not a businessman. You're a business man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan Dempsey in Cincinnati. I get it. Chatter is not coming back. But what about Sequiza?
Dude, I love that podcast. You need to talk to the CNN overlords because they – I want to do it. I was berating someone yesterday about doing a quiz show podcast. It's so fun.
Steve Sigourney in Big Sky, Montana, giving your affinity for both places. If you had to live in Indianapolis or Jacksonville, where would you choose? I'd stay where I am. I think I'd like to go to the Eastern Shore, actually. Yeah. My new
Indianapolis.
Thing. From Peter Jennings, not that Peter Jennings. Have you thought about opening up Chatter 2 in Indianapolis? Maybe some remote broadcast before Colts games. You wanted a live audience experience. Heard you're big there. I'm not big there now. Rich in Laconia, New Hampshire. Upon hearing the nickname you bestowed upon your second grandchild, I couldn't help but feel a bit sorry for Walker. While his little brother's moniker has an air of toughness, Bootsy is at first somewhat less intimidating. But upon reflection, I think maybe I was looking at it the wrong light. If I were back in grade school and about to get into a fight with two brothers named Bootsy and the Hammer, I know what to expect from the Hammer. But a kid named Bootsy is a total wild card. That's a kid who'll kick you in the groin while he recites poetry. Bootsy wears a clip-on tie to school even when it's not picture day and dares everyone to make fun of it. Bootsy is crazy town. Thanks for a great show.
No totally one's going to mess with Bootsy. He's a big one.
So true.
He's big.
He's huge.
Christopher Wright in Grand Haven, Michigan. A couple of weeks ago, I drove to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It was quite windy and there was a lot of traffic. As I drove across the 4.99 miles of the Mackinac Bridge, I found myself tightly gripping the steering wheel and thinking Tony would love this. Then I corrected this. Love is pretty strong. All right, Tony would really like this. Thanks for the years of entertainment. And tell Michael it wasn't raining last weekend in Kalamazoo.
Huh.
That's a long bridge. That suspension bridge in Sarasota, that's a long bridge.
Yeah, that goes on for.
Yeah. Matt Landovazo in Olathe, Kansas. Dear Mr. Tony, I am saddened to hear about the closing of Chatter. As I was standing over the sink wishing I was eating ice cream instead of washing the dishes, I made the following observation. Now that Michael's inheritance has vanished into the ether, I find it more than a coincidence that the forgotten Cadillac became a hot topic when it suffered a small scratch. A scratch that could easily be buffed out by water, I might add. I would take a precautionary step and ensure the deposit at Ingleside has not vanished and your room relinquished before you get placed at a location that only wishes they were Ingleside. P.S. Did you use distilled water on the car, right? Everyone knows it will not work with plain old tap water. Too many minerals. I had no idea. No. I didn't use distilled water, no. Dan Navin in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin. This made me smile and I thought of you. I was in Houston last week and I was upgraded to the Hotel Alessandra. I took this picture and sent it to my 19-year-old daughter and the person related to me by marriage. Here's the reply from my daughter. No text reply from the WRTMBM. I did get the disapproving shake of the head when I returned home. You have a college sophomore hooked as a little. P.S. The hotel shuttle vehicle was a Maserati.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
I was living the 1% life for a few days. He did not enclose the picture, but I think that's great. So, listen, if you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
We're not going to be sunk this
no,
year.
No, we ain't.
We're still in Cup champions. Yeah!
For that woman with fire in her eyes. So if you don't look out for her, you'll grow to despise the way she'll push you over and kick you when you're down. And then she'll keep on running round with every other guy in town. Then she treats you like the movies. It's never the same show twice. She's always ways with the newborn. She's been treating nice. Don't you worry, fella. You see, that's all gonna change. Oh, she swapped you out like she changed your clothes before she learns your name. Then she treats you like roadkill, never going back. Don't she treat you like roadkill? Yes, and tear your heart out, stomp it flat like roadkill. It's never gonna end. Don't she treat you like roadkill? Oh, she packed right up and run you over again. Story. This is a cautionary tale, so you don't wind up like I did, wreckage in her trail. If you see her coming, best get out her way, or you'll wind up like I did, yeah.
Tomorrow, do it all again. I We're not quite there.